The Titanic, the Lusitania. Those ships have gone down in history because of the horrific loss of life when they sank at the Atlantic. But do we know the name Eastland? It is 100 years ago this week when the steamer Eastland capsized at its dock in the Chicago River. 844 passengers died in that disaster, most under the age of 25. So why has the Eastland been forgotten? Caitlin Perry Dial is a doctoral candidate in history at Western Michigan University. She has made the Eastland the focus of her dissertation. Caitlin, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us what happened that morning, July 24th, 1915. What was the excursion about and who was going on board?
The Eastland disaster happened on July 24th, 1915, and that morning was supposed to be an exciting day for 7,000 people of the Western Electric Company. The Western Electric Company made things, all kinds of things relating to electrical instruments, telephone wire. And these people, they're working class, they're immigrants from Bohemia, Germany, Czechoslovakia. It's their one day off in the summer. They're going to their company picnic, and they're really excited. They show up, they wait for hours for the boat. And when it finally allows people to load onto the boat that day, it starts to lean. First, it leans to port, which is the left side. Then it starts to lean to starboard, which is the right side. And then it leans to port again, and it continues to lean until it finally capsizes.
And it was right there at the dock in the Chicago River as this happened.
Yes.
I'm gathering that Western Electric had chartered several steamers to take all of these 7,000 people. So how many were on board the Eastland?
The Eastland's capacity that morning was 2,500 people. And when the boat capsized, 2,500 people were on it.
This happened, what, very, very quickly, it sounds like.
Yes, it happened within just a few minutes. An actual report through court documents says that by 7:30 in the morning, the boat had capsized, and they actually started loading at 7 a.m.
Were there many people below?
Yes, they were loading people onto the boat from the docks. Where the gangway was right at the main deck. And since it was rainy that morning, a lot of people didn't want to wait on the top side of the boat because, you know, they're wearing all their nicest clothes for that day. They didn't want to get wet from the rain. So they went below decks. So when the boat capsizes, a lot of people are left underneath the hull of the boat.
And my understanding is largely women and children.
Out of the 844 people that perish on the boat, the average age of the people who die in the water is 23 years old.
When you've been doing your research for this dissertation, what are some of the stories and accounts that really, really gripped you?
One of my favorite stories is one of Dave Nelson, who's a grandson of an Eastland rescuer, Elmer Nelson. And Elmer was a construction worker working at a site really close to the disaster itself. And when the boat turns over, he's called down to the wreck to cut in holes in the hull of the boat to pull people out. And he does this night and day for 3 days.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah. And actually, Elmer Nelson, or Dave, says that Elmer, his grandfather, didn't even call to notify his grandmother. So with all of the news happening around the Eastland, David's grandmother had no idea if Elmer was even okay.
What about people who were right there, you know, in the area? Was there a rush to help? What do people remember from all of that?
There was a massive rush to help. And even some of the photographs that are now iconic of the disaster will show you different tugs actually forming a bridge from the boat to the dockside to help people who were still on the boat, able to, you know, climb over the railing and actually walk on the hull of the boat to safety. Those boats connected the bridge to get them to safety. And then also passersby were throwing debris into the water to help people who were in the water. And actually, that's probably what caused a lot of drownings on the outside of the boat, were people that were struggling to survive getting hit in the head with debris that's trying to save them.
I'm talking with Caitlin Perry Dial, doctoral candidate in history at Western Michigan University, who has made the sinking of the Eastland the focus of her dissertation. It happened 100 years ago this week. And Caitlin, wasn't the Eastland known to be an unsafe ship? I think the term hoodoo boat in the jargon of the day was used.
It was very top-heavy. A lot of sailors called her a cranky boat, very tippy on the water. When she was built in 1903, Fruit growers in South Haven wanted a new boat to be able to transport passengers and their fruit to and from Chicago from South Haven. And when they ordered Eastland to be built from the Jenks Shipbuilding Company in Port Huron, they really wanted her to be sleek. They wanted her to be fast. They wanted to call her the Queen of the Lakes. And she was. You know, you could call her the Titanic of the Lakes. She was top of the line, fast, but her reputation would soon prove that this design of the boat would make her a really top-heavy boat.
And then there was the action in Congress after the 1912 sinking of the Titanic, right? The idea of, okay, we have to have lifeboats for all. And so am I correct that the Eastland had been only designed to carry 6 lifeboats, but because of the new safety laws, she had 11 that morning?
Yes, and what's really interesting is that when the 1915 season started, the boat's owners, the St. Joseph Chicago Steamship Company, only had the required amount of boats for the capacity that year, which was 2,045. But they knew in July they were going to carry a lot more passengers because of the Western Electric Picnic. So to increase capacity on the boat, they added more lifeboats to carry more passengers. And then 2 weeks before the disaster, she's recertified for 2,500 passengers.
So something intended to save lives actually contributed by adding weight at the top.
Among other things relating to the boat's design, it was definitely the added weight on the top of the boat that, I guess, encouraged it to tip over.
Caitlin, I saw a photograph from the era, right from the day or so after, and it was rows of bodies in Chicago waiting to be claimed and buried. I can't even imagine the scenes in those working class neighborhoods in Chicago with the funerals and the burials.
Even looking at the pictures today, you can't help but feel the emotions that some of those people may have felt during that time. There were even some parishes that had to hold multiple funerals for multiple families at the same time because they just couldn't hold enough services. Even the city of Chicago ran out of caskets for all of the bodies that were being pulled out of the water.
Now, why is it, you think, that the Eastland disaster is not known at all? And when you compare the fact that if you don't count crew members, more passengers died on the Eastland than on the Titanic.
I definitely think that it is related to the ethnicity and the socioeconomic background of the people that were on the boat. If you think about the Lusitania or the Titanic, you only remember really the first class passenger names like John Jacob Astor. But the people on the Eastland, they're all working class immigrants. There's really no person on that boat that has a name that can really cling onto memory. I also believe that there is a capacity for memory within the public in that during that time of the Eastland, there were so many other things going on in terms of the headlines that it was easy for the Eastland to just sort of fade away. World War I and then the influenza epidemic for sure. There were a lot of other things to just push it out of public memory.
Why did you choose the Eastland tragedy for your dissertation, Caitlin?
That's a really good question because I grew up in the Detroit area. I really had no background in the Eastland disaster history until I was about 25 years old and I was living in Kalamazoo and working at St. Joseph at the Heritage Museum. And my very first task there at the Heritage was to organize their postcard collection. And in that box, there was a category called disasters. And it was these pictures of the bodies being laid out in the second armory, the boat tipped on its side. And considering myself a Great Lakes historian and not knowing anything about this, I just had to look into it more. And I ended up finding that there was this question that I needed to answer, which was, why isn't this more memorable?
And you really probably hit that nail on the head that it's very sexy to say you had the Strausses and John Jacob Astor and names like that on the Titanic, although we certainly know many, many immigrants died in the hold of the Titanic down there in the steerage class, but not as luminous a name. And probably, too, is it the fact that these other disasters happened in the Atlantic, so there was kind of this worldwide impact as opposed to the Great Lakes.
Great Lakes history doesn't get the recognition that we really feel that it should because we talk about East Coast and West Coast history, but really, you know, the United States and Canada, we have The Great Lakes is one of our other coasts, and we need to pay attention to that too.
Caitlin Perry Dial is a doctoral candidate in history at Western Michigan University, now in the final stages of her dissertation on the deadliest shipwreck in Great Lakes history, the sinking of the excursion steamer Eastland 100 years ago this week. Caitlin, thank you so much for sharing your work with us and keeping the story of the Eastland alive.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this.